G'day and welcome to Grad Chat, your opportunity to find out about graduate research here at Queen's. My name is CJ the DJ and I'm your host for this week's Grad Chat. Of course, a show like this could not happen without the support of the School of Graduate Studies and Postdoctoral Affairs, as well as CFRC. So thank you very much to both of them. Now, if your mates miss the show at any time, you know, you can download the podcast the next day on either iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify and CFRC Podcasts. So no excuse not to hear what our awesome students and postdoctoral fellows are doing. Today, though, I would like to introduce you to my last interview with Piyush Sahar, who is doing a PhD in computing under the supervision of Dr. Salima Chowdhury and Dr. Kai Saloma. Welcome to GradChat, Piyush.
Yep, thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here today.
That's good, good. So, Piyush, thank you for coming on the show. You started your education in Bangladesh?
Yes.
So what made you come to Canada and Queen's to do your graduate work?
Yeah, so I actually came to Canada to pursue my master's at University of Lethbridge. It's in Alberta.
Yes.
So after completing my undergrad degree, I always had the dream to come to a developed countries for my higher studies. So I decided to come to Canada because the main motivation for me was it's a very peaceful and very motivated country for higher education. So I came to Canada in 2017 for my master's. After completing my master's, I was in a software company, worked there for around 3 years in Toronto.
Okay, during COVID you were doing that then?
During COVID,
yes.
Yeah. So it was like I started before COVID and then during the COVID I worked from home. Then I decided to come to Queen's for my PhD. It was a tough decision for me, though, because my family members were surprised. Oh, are you leaving the job?
Yes.
Yeah, but I left it because I had the dream to come for my PhD.
Well, that's good, because once people have had the taste of getting a full-time wage every week, it's hard to go back, isn't it? And go,
okay,
I'm not going to get a full-time wage now.
Yeah.
So your family is here with you then?
Yeah, my wife and my son is with me. My son is 3 years old.
Ah, right. So born here?
Yeah, he born in Toronto.
Nice.
So he was 2 months when we came to Kingston. So,
wow.
So he's kind of like birth town is Toronto, but he's Kingstonian right now.
I love it. And so before long, you'll be sending him off to school.
Yeah, yeah. So we are planning to send him to school in this September.
Nice.
So hopefully he'll be in campus in this September. I mean, Queen's campus.
Yes. Oh, that's great. Well, it's nice that you've got your family with you, because that's, I mean, I imagine coming from overseas to do something like your studies. Yeah. It's difficult if you couldn't bring your family with you.
Yeah, it's definitely a good support. Like we feel relieved and we can focus on our study or job, whatever we are doing.
Have you managed to have your extended family come and visit?
Yes. So my mom visited on 2022.
Nice.
And also my mother-in-law and father-in-law, they visited last year.
Had to be on your best behavior.
Yeah, definitely. My mother-in-law actually visited twice.
Oh, nice.
Once in 2022 and again in last year.
To see the baby?
Yeah, to see the baby and the daughter as well.
I'm sure they will be here a lot more often.
Yeah, they were happy. Yeah.
Well, that's good. That's good. Well, there's nothing better than your family being happy where you are.
Yeah.
My mother used to always say, as long as I've been to visit you, I can visualize where you are and everything's then okay. But when she can't visualize, she finds it difficult to make sure that I'm going to be all right.
Yes, because they have some imaginary concepts or thinking on their own, right?
Yes, exactly.
So when they come, they can see, okay, that's what it is.
Yeah. So that's good. Well, I guess we should get on to doing a bit more about your work. Otherwise, we could be chatting here all day.
Sure.
Now, you're in computing, which, as I mentioned before we started this interview, sometimes the word computing scares me a lot because there's so many different areas in computing that people can get into. Some more obvious to people like me. I'm going, oh, yeah, I understand robots, sort of. You know, they work. And other parts that are a bit harder, particularly when it comes to incorporating math.
Yeah.
And so I take it you like math and computing as you work with algorithms a lot. So what's the fascination for you with working with math and algorithms and computers?
Sure, yeah. So like from the first day when I started my study in computing, like at the beginning of my undergraduate study, I loved the logic behind it. So the logic in computing, it has a very like fascinating relation between mathematics and computing and some parts of physics, and most importantly, some parts of real world activities.
Right.
So and we can connect those, the logic and the real world scenarios, then it's really interesting. At least like I love it. So that actually drives me to continue my study more and more in computing. So one of my favorite thing when I do my study is to do some outside puzzles, like outside beyond academia,
right?
Some logic puzzles or some real world puzzles which I can connect to my study.
Okay.
And that actually really fascinating for me.
Well, I'm glad it's fascinating for you, because I remember when I had to do a computing class and they said, Colette, it's just all logic. And I go, but whose logic? Because my logic doesn't seem to be working on the same level as you guys are.
Yeah.
But you're right, though. There is logic, of course.
Yeah, one of the major part of in computing is the programming. So we need to do program a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So when you understand the underlying logic behind them, like when you can connect the real world scenarios
with
the puzzles,
yeah,
then you actually love it. Then it's not a burden for you. Then you love it. You love to do it.
And you're looking to see what connects where.
Exactly.
And
then it's not hard for you to not sleep for the whole night and do the program.
I love that. Because it's interesting when we're talking about algorithms and computing and things. I mean, we hear a lot about the word called big data these days. But the questions are usually around, do we have the data we need, or what are we trying to accomplish here? Data, however, can also be manipulated, which we shouldn't be, but it can. But you seem to have found a way that in your work that data can clearly help with improving certain areas of society. Has that always been your intention with the algorithms and things that you use, to use the data to truly benefit areas of society rather than to try and manipulate results to make it look good?
Yeah, you are right. So like the main motivation of all those works, like designing algorithms and coming up with a computing solution, is to make the society better, is to do some betterment for society. But at the same time, when we are talking about big data, like, I mean, in the current era, we have data everywhere, but we need to use it very efficiently, especially for the computing solutions, because the computing solutions, they are artificial, right? We are designing it to perform some specific task. That means the inputs we are feeding it have some specified format.
Right.
So in order to get into that specified format, we need to be able to transform those data into that format, right? So, and we have data everywhere because of the computing applications everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to be very careful how we are using the data, how we are collecting the data. When we are collecting, is there any discrepancy or disruptions between like different parts of data which may cause the solution unfair or biased for a particular community or group?
Yes.
So we need to be very careful on that. So one of big part of my research is actually focused on that, like how we can come up with the symmetrical data platform for the applications that I'm trying to build.
Yeah, because you actually say your research topic is improving efficiency of societal services for the vulnerable through algorithmic approach.
Yes.
So it's I love this word, improving efficiency.
Yeah.
As opposed to improving manipulation.
Yeah. By the way, data manipulation is not bad every time. Sometimes we may need to manipulate data purposely to come up with a solution which is better for most of the people or majority people. But we, at the same time, we need to be careful how we are manipulating it.
Mm-hmm.
Are we manipulating outside of the regulations, or we are still inside the regulations? So come back to my work, so you're right. Like I'm focusing on improving the efficiency of some societal services. So when I'm saying improving the efficiency, so in the social services that currently we have in our society, like any governmental operations or non-profit or non-governmental operations, There are multiple communities or people from different backgrounds involved.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to have a solid data or like asymmetrical data for all of the groups in order to make the solution accessible for everyone.
Right.
But what we noticed, like as a background study, that if we include people from different communities or marginalized communities, then we don't have symmetrical data. Their data are really scattered. So we need to come up with the centralized solutions to make their data or make their information to be compatible for the computing applications.
So, sorry, can I stop you there just quickly?
Sure.
So we do have these different societies, different groups,
yeah.
And you're collecting data and then working with the data. But as you said, you don't always have the same sort of information from each of those groups. So is the first part of what you're doing is finding a common way of collecting the data, so you're comparing apples to apples?
Yeah, so it's not like I'm comparing. So the first part of my work is, it's actually basically like, if I summarize my work, I am developing some algorithmic solution based on transforming our real world people as an agent.
Right.
So I'm developing a multi-agent system, which is a part of artificial intelligence.
Okay.
It's a subtopic of artificial intelligence. So I'm transforming a real people, or like imagining a real people as an agent and making a multi-agent systems. So when I'm developing the multi-agent systems, they involve how I want to make a cooperation among the agents, how they are going to cooperate, how they are going to collaborate to perform a task.
Right.
So when I'm talking about cooperating or collaborating, there comes how their preferences are, or how they are going to make their policy of collaborating with the other agents. The first part of data is how the preferences of the agents that I'm imagining for a people or for a person. For an individual. So when we are collecting those preferences, as a background study, we noticed they really have different dimensions of differences. For example, for a homeless and shelter matching problem, we had in a few of my research works. So in that work, we can see like the homeless individuals can come from any part of the country, if we think about Canada. And they have different regions, and their preferences to go into the shelters are different.
Right.
It's sometimes really very diverse. Some homeless individuals can say, I'm not going to leave that city. I just want to live into this city.
Right.
Some homeless individuals may say, I'm okay with any shelters. So their preferences are really diverse. So in order to make that preference as a symmetric platform to be used for the applications that we are trying to build, we need to come up with the centralized systems that can transform different preferences into a centralized one. So we need to come up with a system which can read the data from multiple sources, mm-hmm. and can come up with the symmetric data.
Okay, so using, this might be unfair, but to using your example, say the homeless, the data you're collecting with their preferences, is that coming from them or from the people who are currently working in those shelters?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So usually for those services, we have a central clearinghouse. We call that clearinghouse. Those can be like any governmental office or any governmental operations or non-profit operations. So they have a platform which collect the data for them and also run the overall applications or overall systems for them, because they might not have access to that application. So a central clearinghouse does that on behalf of them.
Right.
They actually work on those data. But
they're collecting information for how many people come in, what gender,
yes.
where they've come from,
yes.
that kind of thing. They're not actually asking questions of the individual, or are they?
They do.
So it's a bit of a combination of both.
Okay. Yeah, it depends on like what the application is.
Right.
So when we have that data, then we need to work with making it symmetric for everyone,
mm-hmm.
so that we can use it for the application, right? So my first part of work is like coming up with the preference systems which can deal with all those unconventionality or uncertainty on the preferences of the agents.
Right.
So when I'm saying agents, please assume that it's an individual in the society who are involved in the operation or in the service, right? So when we have the agent's preferences, we need to deal with those unconventionality or uncertainty. So my first part of work is how we can build a common or centralized preference system which can deal all those unconventionality and come up with a singular system or symmetric system to make it compatible to use for the application.
And we can use it across the country.
Yeah, exactly.
And so when you come up with this then, because one of your things you mentioned earlier is that, you know, some people want to stay in the same city, others want to move. Are you hoping then that with this system, are you saying that if the person gives approval, they can be moved to a different city to help balance the number of shelters and making sure we're maximizing the shelters?
Yeah, definitely. So there are lots of factors involved. The shelters have some support services which may be specific for that shelter. And it is possible some homeless individuals only need those support services in order to recover themselves, right?
Right.
So it depends on matching those support services as well and how we can utilize those services. Some shelters may have more capacity than the others. So how we can utilize those capacity as well. We don't want to leave that blank because we have very limited resources, right?
So basically there's two main goals, isn't there? One, to maximize the services available and two, ensuring that the individual
get faster recovery.
Get the opportunity quicker in an area that they want to be.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that first part of work, when we have that symmetric preference systems, then my second part of work is actually coming to the core part of computing, which is like transforming the total system as a multi-agent system. And there comes some computational game theoretic approach. So when I'm saying game theoretic approach, it's like in a multi-agent system, when it's a matching problem, for example, the homeless shelter matching, or when it's a coalition-based problem, for example, coalition or team up of some agents for some social work, like disaster response. So in a disaster response system, there might be a team of volunteers who are teamed up for a particular work. So there can be a coalition system, there can be some matching system.
Okay.
So in my PhD research, I'm particularly focused on matching and coalition-based problems of multi-agent systems. So there are like many theories involved, which is particularly from game theory, how the agents are being cooperating or like how their policy is, if based on a situation, how they are going to react. So those are like all those theories we need to study. And then based on the unconventional preference systems, those theories might not match with the preference systems that we just built.
Right, yes.
So that's one of the significant part of my PhD research, to come up with those analyses, how those unconventional preferences have a connection with already built, already analyzed theories.
Mm-hmm.
If they're different, how we can analyze it or how we can simplify that.
So maybe I've missed something here. So with this, I understand what you're trying to do. So is this just all modeling at this point, or have you actually got data that you're using to help you?
So I have not worked with real world data
so far, it's just imaginary right now.
Yes, in my experiment, I actually followed some of the governmental report to prepare my synthetic data. For example, the work on homeless shelter matching, there is a government report on shelter report, which is published every year.
Okay.
So they have a really very insightful patterns, like robust. How many shelters are there and what are their capacities and those stuff. Those are really useful reports and which we can use for our experiment, which is very close to real world data, but it would be good if we can work with real world
data. So if you figure out what you hope you figure out something, would you test it first on, say, just in Ontario or just in Kingston, Frontenac, Lennox region? Would you want to try it first on a smaller scale?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. That would be an ideal approach, to try with a particular region or particular focusing area. As you said, like City of Kingston would be a great example.
we all need to sort of help where we can, can't we? And this would actually be, but it's interesting. I mean, I know you've used the example, say, of the homeless shelters, but do you think with the, I mean, this is all math, and a lot of times with math and computing and all those sorts and algorithms, these models can then be used in other scenarios.
Yes.
And it may just be a slight tweak, but basically the model is the same. It's the data that's coming in, or the product coming in is slightly different. Is this what you're hoping that you're, because this would be very helpful for various levels of government.
Yeah. I'm happy that you bring that point, because one of my motivation, or like that's the main motivation actually for my work, is to come up with the framework which can be applicable for different applications in that area. So when I'm saying like societal services, that means it does not bounded to only the homeless shelter matching or those particular applications. It could be anything. And I am particularly emphasizing on humanitarian operations. Like I'm focusing the problems on humanitarian operations. It could be volunteer and food rescue task matching. It could be volunteers and disaster response task matching.
Those stuff.
So my models that I'm trying to develop, or I'm developing these days, it can be applicable for other problems, other similar problems. And that's what my motivation is. Like I can come up with a framework which can be used in different parts of social services in the government level, or maybe in the non-government level as well.
That's awesome. I mean, I imagine a lot of the non-profit places would be really interested in this. I mean, homelessness, food banks, all those sorts of things. You know, where do we need distributions to be working better?
Yeah, so basically I'm trying to show everyone, or show those individuals who are working for, or who are responsible for those operations, that we can model the real world scenario as an artificial intelligence system.
Right.
And that will actually help us to use all those theories or all those algorithmic approach to come up with a new technological solution. So these days we are trying to come up with the technological solutions everywhere. Mm-hmm. So we are actually co-creating some technology for our society, right? So right now the service is there. I'm coming up with example again, like homeless shelter matching. Mm-hmm. Right now the service is there. We have some service maybe we have some manual service which is matching the homeless individuals into a shelter. So we are trying to co-creating the technology everywhere. So when we are co-creating the technology in the society, we need to be careful that when you're doing that, we are not depriving any particular communities or any particular individuals.
Right.
So the first question that comes into mind, that are we really accumulating the data or preferences wisely or efficiently, so that no information is missing for anyone?
Right.
So in the first part of modeling, that's what our task is, like coming up with a good preference model, and then connecting that preference model into the existing game theoretic or computational game theoretic theories. If they are really not aligned properly, then come up with a new simplification or new theoretical contributions, which leads into an algorithmic solution. Because once we have that theoretical contributions, then we can develop the algorithm there. And based after we have that algorithm, then we can come up with an applications that everyone can see, like human readable or human usable applications. So the central message that I want to transmit is, see, that's how we can model the real world scenario and come up with a technological solution which is fairer than the existing solutions, because we are accommodating all those unconventionality or all those uncertainty.
So I'm going to play a little bit of devil's advocate here, because I totally get what you're trying to do, and having more preferences in there, understanding the situation is great. The devil's advocate part of me says this solution, the world continues to go on to be crazy, and I'm going to use the homeless shelters as an example, could be one way of one province shifting people out of their province to another province that they don't necessarily want. So here we're saying, you know, someone said, well, I don't mind actually moving as long as but it could be used in a way that's not ethically
correct.
Yeah. It could be, well, here's a great way now we can move some of these people out of our province and we don't have to worry about them again.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to them thinking, this is a nice way of us sharing the load across the country, doing the right thing for these people, as opposed to, you know, we've got too many, so let's just shift them because theoretically we can do this. Now, I know that's hopefully not ever going to be the case,
yeah.
But how do you ensure, I guess my question to you then, how do we ensure with these models that we're looking at, particularly if we're looking at how can we distribute services better to more people, how can we ensure that it's not then going to get used for the wrong reason?
Yeah, no, I got the point. So that we can always impose some restrictions on the use of it. Like, for example, when a central body, we can think of government, mm-hmm. is running the operations throughout the country, but each province has some different requirements, or mm-hmm. any city may have some different requirements, we can always put some layers on the using of data in each part of our applications.
Right.
So that will help meeting those requirements of particular city or particular province, and still they are happy with the applications because their requirements are met.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, in order to prevent the wrongdoings or misuse of that, we need to come up with some ethical guidelines, which we can impose on the logics behind the algorithms.
Right.
So those logics, that's what I said at the beginning, this is really fascinating when we can connect the logics behind the algorithms,
yes.
with the real world scenarios or real world activities. Mm-hmm. Then we can have really fruitful solutions. Yeah.
And that's what I like to hear. Fruitful solutions. None of this backdoor, cloak and dagger stuff.
Yeah.
Let's be upfront with everything that we do, and let's all think about our morals and ethics and all those sorts of things.
Yeah.
Piyush, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's, the word computing will not scare me as much anymore, I don't think.
Yeah.
So thank you very much for explaining what you're doing and your part of helping society using computers and algorithms and all those sorts of things.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me and your time on listening to that.
Okay, well, thank you, Piyush. Yeah. So that's it, everyone. Another week of Grad Chat sadly comes to an end. And as mentioned, this is also my last time to host Grad Chat. And I just want to say it's been a great experience and a pleasure for me to be on the show from the beginning. So thank you very much to everyone for listening over the years and sticking with me. Moving on, though, my colleague Katie Marie McNeil will be taking over hosting duties. So I know you're all in good hands, and because she's been sitting with me for the last few sessions, just keeping an eye on what I'm doing and making sure she has an idea, although it'll be in her own way, of course, not quite like how I do it. Everyone has to have their own flair. So now, don't forget, though, you can download the show just to finish off things properly tomorrow on either iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and CFRC Podcast. Just type in Grad Chat. This is CJ the DJ signing off for the last time with a big hooray.
CFRC 101.9 FM is pleased to present a new Airwave YGK workshop brought to our community. Young, emerging local musicians are welcome to join us on August 21st at 11 a.m. at CFRC for our free industry intro, Getting Your Music Out There workshop with Mark Garnis and Chancellor Miracle. Come learn about getting your band booked, applying to festivals, procuring booking agents, touring, funding, submitting music to CFRC and other radio stations nationally, plus other great tips and tricks for emerging musicians and bands. Space is limited. Register now through Instagram at CFRC Radio or our website at cfrc.ca.
On CFRC 101.9 FM every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 p.m., you'll hear Finding a Voice. My name is Bruce, host of that poetry-focused spoken word program. On it, you'll hear local readings and events, occasionally telephoned interviews across Canada, and always a touch of music. Again, Finding a Voice, here every Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. Check it out. Hope to catch you there.
Broadcasting 24/7, 365, you're listening to 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca, Kingston's only campus community radio station. Tune in for the best local programming.
Today on Wings, we have a documentary by Margareta Darcy, Irish actress, playwright, filmmaker, and peace activist. At 91, she still gets out in the streets in her wheelchair with her bullhorn, calling Ireland to protect its constitutional neutrality. Here from our archive is the radio documentary Margareta produced for Wings about founding Ireland's version of the Raging Grannies.
Hello, we're the Galway Raging Grannies. We set up a few years ago when we heard about the Raging Grannies in the US, Canada, and elsewhere. Galway is in the west of Ireland. The Atlantic is next door. And next stop is America. So we first heard about Raging Grannies. I think I read something about the newspapers. And I was visiting at a small little party. And I mentioned the Raging Grannies. And suddenly a woman who I hadn't thought of as being very political, suddenly said, Raging Grannies. That's a great title. We should become part of Galway's Raging Grannies. And I wondered why she was so emphatic about being a granny. And then she told me that she had just been contacted by her daughter, who had two children. She had given up her daughter for adoption years and years ago. So many Irish women had to give up their children for adoption because of shame, because their families didn't want to know, because as single parents, how were they to live? And I suddenly realized that Galway's Raging Grannies, we were not only talking about the injustices about what was happening in our country, but the injustices that each woman had had during those long years. So we became Galway's Raging Grannies.
All right, Grannies, are you ready?
Army, down by the riverside. Down by the riverside, noble in you army. Down by the riverside, it goes steady. War, no
so I downloaded some of their songs, and I thought that the songs were so similar to a lot of our problems. Like, the grannies are swarming with warnings of warming. It's time we're performing our country's great shame. So we'll keep performing our global informing till they stop deforming the earth in our name. Now, same situation, what's happening in Ireland? Here's another one. How many nights must a child go to bed without being properly fed? In this great country, how many must die before our politicians see red? The answer, of course, must be in our hearts. There's plenty of food for us all. Well, now in Ireland, we are one of the richest countries in Europe. We've homelessness. How many nights must they sleep in the streets in winter so bitterly cold? How many more must die on our streets before the world's another year old?
How many nights must they sleep
in the streets. In winter, so bitterly cold. How many more must die on the streets? The grassroots movement aims to make the world a better and fairer place for all. So everyone's welcome to join us and have a granny. It's a global movement. We sing songs of peace and love.
We sing for our children and grandchildren too, and our voices ring out clear and strong with the news that capitalism is fouling our land, so we must change the system. That's the granny's demand.
PESCO stands for Permanent Structured Cooperation. It's an acronym, and essentially it means it came about because of the Lisbon Treaty, which was the referendum that we got wrong, which in actual fact we obviously got it right in the first place, and then they gave it to us again, and then this is what we signed up for, a Permanent Structured Cooperation, basically with the superpowers, France and Germany, and what it means is an EU army to fight a threat. Of course the threat now is Russia, the threat is America, the threat is made up, there's no threat. And there's no need for an EU army, and I'm an advocate for pacifism.
No EU army. Tesco, not Tesco, lads.
So we identified, and then we began making our own songs as well. We shall not pay for endless wars. We shall not pay for endless wars. We'll pay for jobs and health and education, not for endless wars. We don't want Leo supporting endless wars. We don't want Leo supporting endless wars. We should all tell Michael D and Sabina no more endless wars.
No to the EU army. Peace, not PESCO. Raging grannies strike again here in Chop Street with our songs. Peace, not PESCO.
Because what we found out is that in Ireland, we have an armament industry. Now, we always thought Ireland was meant to be a neutral country. We always thought we had nothing to do with wars, we had nothing to do with the armament industry. And suddenly, the Raging Granny songs opened our eyes to what was happening in our own country. And that is one of the reasons why we suddenly decided, Galway's Raging Grannies. What a wonderful word, raging, raging, raging grannies. That's the key, the word raging grannies. And nothing can stop us.
No more new army, down by the riverside, down by the riverside, down by the riverside. No more new army.
Now, many of you may have landed at Shannon. It's the first stop that you come to when you leave the United States of America. Shannon, which is one of our international airports. It was the first airport to actually introduce free duty, which meant is you go to Shannon and buy as much booze and cigarettes and goods as you wanted. But Shannon, on the one hand, it's a civilian airport. We have our tourists coming in. We have our people going to America for work. But on the other hand, it's also occupied by the military. How can it be that we can have a civilian airport and at the same time a military airport? So this is one of the reasons why Raging Grannies is that we decided to rage not only down at the airport, but also outside our ministers. our Minister of Transport, who has allowed planes to land. Our Minister of Foreign Affairs, who allows these planes to go through Shannon. When, on the other hand, they say, we're a neutral country. We don't support wars. We are a non-military country. And yet, there at Shannon is a visible proof of their lies, which we have to expose.
3 million troops, American troops, through Shannon Airport in the last few years. No to PESCO, no to NATO, no to war, no conscripting 19-year-old young men to fight someone else's imperialist wars.
So at Shannon, we go in, we sing, we dance, we throw rice on the floor, food, not bombs. And the authorities there, they don't know what to do with us. One time when we went in, there were a plane load of tourists and they began clapping us as we were doing our line dancing. And the authorities, they didn't know which was worse, the tourists clapping us and taking photos, the press that was there, total confusion. We also cut the fence. We cut the fence, they come along. What can they say to us? We're raging grannies. We go to the Department of the Foreign Affairs. We tie up the doorway so that when the minister comes out, he is tied up. What can they say to us? We're the raging grannies. It's as if the word raging grannies has got a powerful force behind it. Raging grannies. They don't know what to do with us. Raging grannies. Raging grannies. Raging grannies. Oh, yes. We have a lot to rage about.
You know by the cost of being to Ireland, the U.S. Army has the right of way. Consider what the aircraft land at Shannon, transporting troops and weapons every day. 1,000 U.S. soldiers pass through Shannon weekly and destroy the concept of neutrality. They only bring corruption and abuses, suffering and criminality.
Thousands of young American soldiers have gone through Shannon, coming from the most disadvantaged sections of America. They don't know where they're going, they don't know what war they're fighting for, and they don't know why. 30,000 of them have committed suicide when they come home. Traumatized, mentally and physically ill, compared to 7,000 have been killed in combat. But 5 million people have been killed in wars led by the US NATO forces. 1 million children have died through starvation, through bombs, through destruction of their villages, led by the US NATO forces. And our government, which is meant to be neutral, has allowed this to happen.
The US Army has the right of way. Ireland shares the shame of British warfare. Across the seas to countries far away.
We've issued a press release. Raging grannies say it's time to confront the ministers. Raging grannies will gather outside the Department of Transport, Tourism and Sport to demand that the minister stop authorizing the daily transit of weapons through Shannon Airport by the US military. And we're asking the public to join our colorful protest at the department. We're also going to make ourselves heard at the Department of Foreign Affairs, which is authorizing the use of Shannon by other US military planes. Anyone who feels as we do, rage, humiliation and emotional abuse, is invited to confront the ministers who are almost daily authorizing aircraft operated by or contracted by the US military to refuel at Shannon Airport to fly through Irish sovereign airspace. These aircrafts are carrying weapons and munitions of war and arm soldiers to fight in wars that they know nothing about.
Lady Grammys are on the move. The Lady Grammys are on the move.
Grannies out on the loose. Two raging grannies, who let them out? Look at the Americans, see how they run with their killing machines, their bombs and their guns. Two raging grannies out on the loose. Two warrior women busy cleaning house with peace and love and handfuls of rice. Two raging grannies not being denied. See there the fire in righteous eyes. Two raging grannies who will not be denied, armed with the truth, exposing lies.
Your planes bring death. Your planes bring death. The children cry.
The children cry. The children cry. No planes, no war. The children cry. No planes, no war. Listen to their cry when your bombs drop into their lives and they die. When your bombs drop into their lives and you and they die. They die. They die. They die. In World War II, Ireland was neutral. Since that time, is that we have not engaged in any wars. But over the weekend, we had a statement from our Prime Minister saying, country will have to reflect on military policy. He then explains that we have already been involved in Europe with the participation in PESCO, Permanent Structured Cooperation, which was passed by our parliament a few years ago. And that meant that Ireland then was part of talks about how best to defend Europe and whether we should give money to the defence. In other words, the creation of a European army. I was out today in my local Main Street to find out how people thought about things. When we had the Lisbon Treaty a few years ago, the first treaty was rejected because it was totally incomprehensible, but we were campaigning constantly against the fact that the Lisbon Treaty would mean that Irish troops would be involved in war. So we had another Lisbon Treaty, and this time our language was put in that Ireland should not participate in any war, that our Irish troops should not go to war, And to guarantee this, was put in place something called the triple lock. Now, the triple lock means that we cannot send troops to any war unless the government agrees. We cannot send troops to any war unless the parliament agrees. And number three, which is the one important factor today, is that we cannot send troops abroad unless the war is guaranteed as a just war by the United Nations. Now, the situation with which our government is facing and Europe is facing, they do not trust the United Nations anymore because China and Russia sit on the Security Council and they can veto any formulation of Ireland to break the triple lock and end our neutrality. Now, what's very interesting is Russian ambassador in Ireland suddenly says that Ireland is at the head of anti-Russian protests in the European Union. And also, the Russian ambassador explains that Ireland's neutrality is absolutely guaranteed, that we should not have anything to do with the Ukrainian war. And he says, in general, the Irish are kind, but sometimes when they don't understand the situation, they take sides without any analysis. And he goes on that it is the NATO forces that were surrounding the countries on the border of Russia. And as we know, that many of the NATO forces are coming through Shannon. Just today, I got an email that the US and Ukrainian planes are passing through Shannon, loaded with guns and some kind of military equipment, and they are flying off to Poland. So today, a beautiful, beautiful sunny day, I decided to find out what the Irish people feel about us ending our neutrality. So I came out with a little notebook, approached people and said, look, I'm doing a survey and there's one question I would like you to answer. Should non-aligned neutrality to be enshrined in the Irish Constitution? Now, data collected from every public opinion poll on Irish neutrality by public opinion polling companies have showed that 82% of the Irish people support neutrality in all its aspects, because the Article 29 of the Constitution states, Ireland affirms its devotion to the ideal of peace and friendly cooperation amongst nations founded on international justice and morality. Now, in the words of James Connolly, who was executed in 1916, we serve neither king nor Caesar. So this morning, I opened my door, brilliant sunshine. My neighbour was coming out of her door and I thought I'd ask the first question. I said, oh, do you think we should give up on neutrality and join the war? And she looked rather a bit perplexed. And she said, I don't really know anything about it. And I said, look, should we be non-aligned neutrality to be enshrined in the Constitution? And she says, well, we've got to help the Ukraine people. And I said, yes, but how? What kind of help do the Ukraine people need? And she said that she didn't know. So she was undecided about whether we should be a non-aligned neutral country or whether we should go to war. She said she'd think about it. So across the road, there was a young man. And I went across to him and I said, should we be a non-aligned neutral country and should it be enshrined in the Constitution? And he said, definitely. He said, I want to shoot Putin, but definitely is that we should have nothing to do with wars. So you have an elderly lady and you have a young man with opposing views. So I go down Shop Street, which is our main street, and many people are there. It's at 1 o'clock, it's lunchtime. People are sitting in cafes, enjoying themselves. And so I spotted a friend of mine who was having coffee with her husband. So I put this question and she said, definitely. And she gave me a very good line. She said, stop weaponizing the world. Stop weaponizing the world. Now, her husband was really quite interesting, even though he's meant to be a therapist. And he kept on about the broad, long weapon that was used back before the Middle Ages. And his understanding was, we've always had wars, and wars are always going to be. So my friend and I, we shouted at him and we said, if that is your attitude, wars will continue. But let us stop wars and stop taking sides. And he said, I hate Putin. I hate Putin. I'm for Biden. When I pointed out about Biden and the American policy of all the wars that they've engaged in and all the damage that has been happening, Iraq, Afghanistan, the Yemen, and in spite of the United Nations policy about Palestine, would one want to live there? Would one want to be a free person in Palestine? So I then moved on and spoke to another couple, and they were Americans. And they agreed, yes, is that we need neutrality. But what they said is, that's not going to mean anything because we have all these big countries and they can just do anything they want with us. So with my research, I definitely found is that young people have an awareness and they don't want wars. Older people feel helpless that they don't have any power. But on the other hand, research has shown if 3.2% of the population rise up and against something, is we can then win. And I think that the young people are going to make sure that we don't lose our neutrality. Thank you. This is Margaret Darcy from Radio Part Woman signing off. And the program has been edited and recorded by my dear son, Finn Arden. And here's a message for all the raging grannies round the world. I send my love and my hope for a better world.
All right, grannies, are you ready?
To hear Wings shows again, email wings@wings.org. Wings thanks your local radio stations, Suzette Cullen and Genevieve Vaughn, whose works include Women and the Gift Economy. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
KPP Concerts has a stacked lineup of all-ages concerts happening at the Broom Factory through the summer into early fall. On June 27th, check out Housewife, followed by Friday's Child at the Broom Factory on July 11th. Then on August 10th, enjoy music from hip-hop artist Matt Mac, followed later by The Dirty Nil on September 19th. Then on September 26th, it's Petite Belle Ivo and neo-grunge icons The Bridge City Sinners.